We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Kevin Fishbane, Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
Man, I'm wondering, during your self-scout, did anything surprise you positively or negatively?
We have a good pulse on knowing that big picture, the struggle to run the football is where a lot of this stuff starts. And so different reasons for that. And what is it? Is it scheme? Is it execution? Is it a little bit of both? And then knowing, okay, that has to get better. Regardless, I don't care who we're playing, the run game has to get better. I'd say in the passing game, whether it's pass protection, whether it's routes and details of the routes, it's really, Kevin, all of that coming together at the same time.
A man who reports responsibly.
This is my first radio hit wearing a mask.
What are we rocking?
I think it's actually from The Gap, because I might as well try to be stylish while I gotta wear one, right?
Kevin Fishbane.
What's the saying? If you have nine tight ends, do you even have one?
Talking Bears with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score. The Score.
Kevin Fishbane covers the Bears for The Athletic. He is at K Fishbane on Twitter. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And as always, he is on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Kevin, what's going on, man?
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Good. That's a really good question to Matt Nagy. And the way he answered it, the way he chose to broaden his response, essentially, he was describing offensive coordination, for lack of a better term. That's what he's saying. We looked at, we can't run the ball because our offense isn't coordinated in the run game. That's another way of translating that answer as I heard it.
Yeah, you know, Dan, it's one of those things where that first part where he immediately goes to the run game, I'm going ding, 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 here we go. And then he starts going into all the other things, which kind of reminds you how much of this offense is broken. That even the brief moments they've had these 5 or 7 yard runs, then there's a penalty, then there's a negative yard gain, then there's a receiver running the wrong route, there's a bad throw. Just these things kind of pile up on them. It was interesting, though, Dan, to hear him say things kind of start with the run game, because that's just the antithesis of Andy Reid, right? I mean, the West Coast offense isn't necessarily an offense that begins with the run game. Matt Nagy just has realized that, wow, when nobody respects what we can do on the ground and we can't do anything else right, it's really stuck. So, you know, I've always said this since Matt Nagy got here, that we don't talk about the Kansas City Chiefs run game because they have Patrick Mahomes. It doesn't really matter. The Bears don't have anything close to that at quarterback, so it exacerbates this run game problem.
You know what I'm wondering, too? Maybe that betrays an awareness of this week's game plan a little bit. We talked to Gary Ellerson yesterday, and he said, you run against the Packers. He said, it's not a very stout defensive line. The way you control a game is run it right up the gut. And maybe that's already him saying, we know what we have to do to give ourselves a chance.
Yeah, you know, and that's going to be the thing, too, because if the Packers look at it and say, hey, we're just not going to let you run it and force you to pass it, if they put everything into stopping the run, which is a funny thing because it shouldn't take much to stop the Bears' run, how does that counter what Matt Nagy decides to do? You know, watching that Colts game, it was interesting because I did think the interior of that Packers defensive line played pretty well. For the most part, Jonathan Taylor eventually got some chunk runs in the second half, kind of wore them down at certain times. But if you look at what the Colts did to them, you know, a lot of it was Phillip Rivers. I mean, Phillip Rivers had a phenomenal game, especially on third down, finding open receivers. And, you know, but Jonathan Taylor had 90 plus yards rushing. So they were able to have a little bit of complimentary football. So, you know, you go back and you watch what Dalvin Cook did to Green Bay. Obviously, the Bears have nothing close to what that Vikings rushing offense can do. But you're like, oh, there are holes here. There are things that we can do. But, Dan, it's been a few years since the Packers had a good run defense. And I feel like each year we've talked about this Green Bay game thinking, oh, well, this is an opportunity to run the ball well, and they haven't been able to do it.
It also depends how the offense functions with whichever quarterback they choose, because the Packers, I don't think they're going to be daunted by Mitchell Trubisky, because they've been pretty upfront about they think they can beat him, and they drop into zones and they wait for him to make a bad read and he'll throw you the ball. And if they are in some zones, maybe you will have a better opportunity to have fewer guys in the box and to run the ball a little bit that way. Then it's a matter of staying out of obvious passing situations, staying out of third and nine and third and 10, and giving yourself better down and distance. But do you think that they know who the quarterback is going to be, or do you believe them that there's still injury news to be had internally?
Well, it's one of two things, Dan. It's they already know it's going to be Mitch, or they are waiting for Nick Foles to get healthy. That's kind of I'm speculating a little bit from what Matt Nagy said yesterday, from what we heard from the folks who were at Hallis Hall for practice and what they saw, you know, because, you know, look, Matt's always going to be one of gamesmanship. He's going to try to wait until the last minute probably to announce certain things. We're probably going to find out Wednesday. And because you can't begin a game prep week without knowing who your starting quarterback is, if you have the option to already know. So I wonder if they're giving Nick Foles one more full day of recovery, see what he looks like, you know, come Wednesday morning. But that's kind of the way I read it. You know, I just have wondered, Dan, this whole time, if Matt Nagy just wants to do anything possible but give Mitch Trubisky the starting job back. Hmm. I mean, we're talking about a head coach who pulled a guy when the team was undefeated. And I don't need to like relitigate that, because we all understand why, we all understand the background of that. But I think that's told you a lot about the way the head coach felt about Mitch Trubisky. And we've seen week after week after week of it not working with Nick Foles. He's had opportunities, if he's wanted to, you know, to go back, of course, and he hasn't. This is the golden opportunity. But as you said, you're talking about going against a Packers team where you're going to have to score points. It's funny though, Dan. I look back. So 5 years ago, Thanksgiving was the Tracy Porter game, when Tracy Porter and Vic Fangio's defense just totally stymied Aaron Rodgers. The Bears won 17-13 on Thanksgiving night in Lambeau Field. It was really the peak of the John Fox era. They got to 5-6.
It had won.
That was it. That was the moment. And for like that next week, we actually looked at the schedule like, wow, they have Washington and San Francisco in back-to-back weeks. Last place teams, they could actually get into the playoff race. And then, of course, they lost both those home games to bad teams. But I think back to that game because I think the only way you win is you put together a game like that. Your defense has to play out of their heads, like they did in week one against the Packers last year when they held Green Bay to 10 points. The problem was you just have to get your offense to score one more point than the other team. And if your offense can't do it, you got a problem. So, like, it's we have to talk about the quarterback. We have to figure out how this offense is going to get fixed. But I still think the best offense is going to be the defense turning into 2018 again and finding a way to take the ball away from the most difficult quarterback in maybe the history of football there is to do that against.
Or you have this Shea McClellan game where you just break his collarbone and you get the next guy in there.
Yeah, that could work. You know, look, Shea's playing pickleball out in Southern California. There still might be time to bring him in.
Is it professional pickleball or just recreational pickleball?
He has turned into quite the pickleball player. I'm not sure where he's at on the circuit, but we had a story up at some point earlier this spring or winter about what Shea McClellan's been up to, and he's been gotten really good at pickleball.
I've been trying to—I don't even know where to go with that. That was not on the scouting report when they drafted him. I'm not sure that I can envision the Bears team, and I mentioned this yesterday, that when this team has had time to look at itself, to self-evaluate, to try to be honest with itself, nothing good ever seems to come of it. It's like they don't take advantage of these opportunities. And I'm talking even to, it seems like when off seasons go by and we hear all the high-minded, highfalutin stuff about next level and 200 level classes, and it's night and day, and Mitch is seeing things, and we're installing things. Every time they've got all this coaching time, we never see it manifested when the game starts, because then it's still a Bears game. One way or another, something happens, and it's still exactly what it was before. Why should this time be any different?
I don't know if it will, Dan. I really don't. I mean, you hit it. There's no reason to think it'll be different. Even you go back to 2018 when things were great, and they lost after a bye. Yep. They lost after extra time, extra rest of the Giants. They lost a bad team when you always hear coaches say it's so much easier to fix things when you're doing well, when you're coming off a win, and they didn't do it that year. And you look into 2019, all the buildup to week one, and this year, all the buildup to week one, and they needed heroics in the fourth quarter just to beat the Lions. So I have no problem with anybody having zero confidence in this team looking that much different, you know, because when Bill Lazor took over as the play caller, they had that one drive, right? The 14 play, 70-yard drive. And you're like, this does kind of look different. And, you know, we're seeing Nick Foles in the move a little bit. We're seeing run plays that aren't getting stopped at the line. And then they stalled in the red zone, and that was it. And then the rest of the game somehow looked worse than what we had seen the previous six games. So the only way, Dan, that I think you get that at least different is if Mitch Trubisky starts, because I think then you go back to the offense we saw weeks 1 through 3. We know how different that looks to what the Nick Foles offense was. But the problem is we don't know if that's going to necessarily be any better. We don't know if that's going to be any more effective, because as you said, we know the way Mike Pettine knows how to defend Mitch Trubisky. So that's, if you're looking for something that's going to kind of wow you, like, wow, this is different, that would be it. Because if Nick Foles is still the starter, you can't ask him to run the Mitch Trubisky offense. And again, I don't know if you want to. And, you know, what? Is it going to be 10 targets to Cole Kmet? Is it going to be 30 carries to David Montgomery? You know, is it going to be kind of play cadence, play calling things that we see that are different? Maybe, but you can factor those into your game plan, and then it gets thrown out the window if you have a 3-and-out here and there, and then suddenly you're playing by behind because, oh, yeah, it's Aaron Rodgers.
And that's the other variable, is Lazor. First of all, are we certain he's going to call the plays? And then how would we envision his play calling sequencing, how he would do that with a brand new quarterback? I mean, this is something we haven't seen and the Packers haven't seen.
No, it's true. And, you know, last week, Matt Nagy made it seem like Bill Lazor was going to call plays again. He left open the possibility that he doesn't. You know, Lazor did call when they were in training camp. He was handling a lot of the two-minute stuff, the red zone stuff. So, and that included, obviously, half the snaps of Mitch Trubisky. So you would imagine he's got an idea. And look, maybe he has some wrinkles himself that we didn't see Matt Nagy use in those first 3 weeks with someone like Mitch Trubisky. So, again, that opens up some mystique, I guess, you know, some intrigue if he's going to be the play caller and you switch back to Mitch Trubisky at quarterback. But, you know, and not to go on too much of a tangent here, Dan, but when I was looking up the run game struggles, it really is amazing the difference it made when Mitch Trubisky was running the ball effectively. Yeah. You know, I was going through the Kansas City Chiefs running numbers because, again, you don't think of the Chiefs as a running team. And they were consistently in the middle of the league in rushing attempts, in the top 10 in yards and yards per carry. And a huge part of that was Alex Smith. I mean, Alex Smith was running for 5-plus yards per carry most of his seasons there. The one season he didn't was the season the Chiefs were worse rushing the ball. The Kareem Hunt year was a bit of an outlier because then you had a star running back who was playing like a star running back. You look at 2018, the Bears were 11th in the league in rushing yards total. Now, they weren't very good per carry, but they were good. You know, they were, and a lot of that was Mitch Trubisky, Tariq Cohen as well, as kind of your change of pace. It just, I want, and now with the shoulder, you don't know. You just don't know what Mitch Trubisky can do for you as a runner. But I just think back to that, how much that helped this team, having him run, and how much it helped the Chiefs, having a quarterback who could run the ball. And Nick Foles, you just don't have that whatsoever. And if Nick Foles was doing what Nick Foles is supposed to do, pinpoint accuracy, being efficient, moving the ball downfield, matriculating that ball, getting first downs, we wouldn't really worry that he can't run, but he's not. He's not doing that. They don't have the pass protection. So that's why you sit here being like, wow, if you had a quarterback who could maybe run for 50 yards a game, that might open some things up.
But that's really been the story, too. You hit on it. Nick Foles has not been what they said he was going to be, period. That everything expected of, well, you know, Mitch can't do this and Mitch can't do this. This guy, he may not be Mitch, but he's going to plug all these holes and do all these things. He hasn't. This has been a total flop.
And Dan, from the first half against Indianapolis, I mean, that was eye-opening. I know the Colts are a good defense, but if you're the quarterback, if you're the hand-chosen guy, you're supposed to do okay against a good defense. You're not supposed to look horrible against a good defense. So, you know, I look back to that game as the beginning where it's like, you know, you spent all these months. And look, I bought into it too. Like, I understood the Nick Foles logic. I wasn't sitting there being like, they should have signed Cam Newton, they should have done this, because I got it. It's a, you know, it was a strange year. Get somebody you're comfortable with, get somebody who knows the offense, trust your defense, and just have a guy who's not going to turn the ball over. I understood it. And then within a couple of games, it's like, well, wait a second. If this is who you're brought in, I think you could have opened your mind up to some other options at quarterback and opened your playbook up and not just limited it to this guy. So you're right. I mean, that's been really the ultimate problem, that he just has not provided what you'd expect. And look, we can talk about the offensive line and we could talk about other things, but Dan, and I think I probably said this to you before, I do think it's interesting the way we frame the discussions about the quarterback. When it's Nick Foles, I feel like you hear the coaches talk about the offensive line a lot and the running game a lot. When Mitch Trubisky was started, you heard a lot more about Mitch. And it was a lot more about the way Mitch was playing. And again, look, Mitch Trubisky was not playing great as quarterback. I'm not trying to sit here saying that he should have been the starter the whole time. But it is kind of – I wonder how confounded they are that Nick Foles has played the way that he has, which is maybe why they keep pointing to the offensive line. They point to wide receivers not running their routes correctly, things like that. But boy, oh boy, I mean, you spend so much time talking about and drilling into our minds that this guy knows our offense. We trust this guy to run our offense the way it should be run. And you know, maybe it's a broken offense and nobody can run it, or maybe you brought in a broken quarterback to run a broken offense and this is what you have.
Yeah, the answer might be both, sadly enough. The injury report's going to come out today, and we've got a lot of names and a lot of moving parts here, whether it's Hicks and Montgomery, Foles himself, Trubisky. What are we looking for? What clues are we going to get from how people are listed today?
It's going to be interesting. It'll actually be Wednesday because the Bears are off today. So we'll get that injury report sometime around you know, early afternoon on Wednesday. And, yeah, the first thing you're looking at is the quarterback. Is who was practicing, if they were full, if they were limited. You know, Dave Montgomery was out there yesterday, which is a good sign. You need him really in this lineup. And then Akeem Hicks. I mean, we all know what an impact player Akeem Hicks is, and is the D-line already without Roy Robertson-Harris. You know, look, credit Jay Rogers, credit the personnel staff. They keep bringing in these D-linemen off the street who play well. But you're going to need him in the game. So those are the key injuries you're going to be looking at. But yeah, it's all going to be about quarterback. And seeing which of these guys is ready. And I would hope, Dan, for, you know, selfishly for our sake, that Matt just tells us Wednesday, when I think he talks at, you know, 1:30 or 2:30, hey guys, this is who the starter is. Or we also might find out before that, I believe around 10:30 a.m. is when the quarterback is scheduled to talk. It's Nick Foles on the schedule, the media schedule. So we'll see if it actually is Nick Foles talking to us. But we've also seen Bears teams in the past switch that around. So that's what we're looking for, and I would imagine we're going to get a lot of answers on Wednesday, and we'll kind of see we can kind of guess what their plan is going to be against Green Bay, because you're at the point now where every game is must win if you want to kind of stay in this thing.
And lastly, free Artavis Pierce. I saw a nice little cut on that one run that he had, and they misidentified him as Lamar Miller on the broadcast. But I know there's always a reason, and my experience says when you're wondering why doesn't this running back play more, it's usually doesn't know the plays, can't pass protect, has other issues. But, man, other teams find running backs. I'm tired of slow running backs. He looks like he's not slow at the very least. So I would like to see more. And every time I ask this question, people agree with me and say, yeah, sure, we'd like to see more. Maybe the Bears will finally be that team that lucks their way into a found running back.
Doesn't it say something about the Bears that Artavis Pierce had 2 6-yard runs and we were all like, whoa, okay. You know, this is something. And I'll say this, Dan. I was watching Ravens Titans on Sunday, and my wife said to me, she goes, huh, it's weird watching a game where the teams know how to run the football. Like, yeah, This is what it could look like.
Magic.
Yep. Yeah, I was like, Artavis Pierce, you saw a little spark. You saw something different. Yeah. You saw him just move forward, right? Just
that's
quickly,
good. Forward's good. I like forward. Yeah.
Yes, quickly move forward past the line. I'm with you. I think it's a perfect change of pace. And that way you don't have to have Montgomery out there 90% of the time. Not that I don't think Montgomery's a good player, but you got to have some other option there because this thing just isn't working the way it is. And of all the things that happened in that Bill Lazor game, that was one thing I kind of wrote down. Artavis Pierce showed you something on two carries that you're not getting from you're not getting it from Cordarrelle Patterson. You're not getting it from Ryan Nall. You're not even looking to see if Lamar Miller can give it to you. Why not give this guy 5 or 7 carries a game and just see what he can do?
There you go. Kevin Fishbane, thanks. Have a great Thanksgiving and continued good health.
All right, you as well, Dan.
That is Kevin Fishbane. I came to a realization that something has to be done in a certain sport here. Where I'm asking the question with every headline, with every tweet, with every bit of news that I see. I think we need to be honest about something that's going on right now and ask the question, what the hell are we doing? What exactly are we doing? Why the hell are we doing it? And are we really going to do this? I'll tell you what I'm talking about next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
We don't control it. It controls us, this virus. The good news is they're saying that of all the sports, they don't believe anyone has caught it from the playing field or the court. I may be overdoing it, but I'd rather be safe than sorry.
Good luck with that. That's John Calipari talking about the state of college basketball. And the honest question here is, what the hell are we doing? And why are we doing it? We know the issues with college football, the multiple cancellations, the rampant stupidity, the contribution to the endangerment of public health, especially with what's happening now, with where the graph is going in so many places, in so many states, and the cancellation of tournaments, of season openers, of so many coaches getting sick. Maybe we should just press pause on college basketball right now. And it's amazing to me. Consider everything he's been through and say what you want about Rick Pitino and as scandal-marred as his programs have been. First of all, after Billy Donovan was hired by the Bulls, we had him on. He's now coaching Iona, and we had him on for a lengthy interview. He was an absolute delight. He couldn't have been more charming, more interesting, and just more fun to have around. If you missed that interview, it's one I think you'd really enjoy talking about his protege, who's now coach of the Bulls. And Rick Pitino on Twitter said what I think is the smartest thing right now. And he's been saying it. And in his tweet, he said, "I'll say it again to anyone who will listen. Push the season back to March. And then have May Madness. Give the vaccine a chance in the best interest of all involved." There is no counterargument to that. There's no reasonable counterargument to that. There's a piece here in The Defector at defector.com. And if you haven't subscribed, that's all of the old great Deadspin people who now own their own sports website that is really sort of a recreation of the old great Deadspin. And they're doing all the things they used to do in all the best ways and doing it all themselves. And Patrick Redford wrote a piece where he said the Duke men's basketball team was supposed to start in the Bahamas, and that tournament was canceled. And then every team besides Duke agreed to attend a makeup tournament held in South Dakota, of all places. South Dakota is a petri dish. South Dakota is a complete COVID nightmare right now. And teams started dropping out of that tournament. You had case numbers exploding across the nation in there. Texas A&M dropped out of the men's tournament. Creighton dropped out. Utah, Ohio State, and Dayton dropped out. So Wichita State said, okay, we'll step in. Like nothing else is going on at Wichita State right now. And then they arrived Monday night and multiple players tested positive. And that's just the South Dakota tournament right now. This is just been, it's one thing for football to sort of be soldiering through with these 80-man rosters. When you're talking about a basketball roster, and you know, what are you playing then? If you're saying, well, we can play because we got, you know, 3-4 guys out, that's okay. When that's a quarter of your team, you know, Baylor isn't going to go to Connecticut to start against Arizona State because Scott Drew tested positive. So Utah stayed away from South Dakota, but they're not going to have their opening game. Rick Barnes, head coach of Tennessee, has COVID. Jim Boeheim of Syracuse has COVID. Tom Izzo has COVID. It's just, it's amazing. Plus, there's going to be out-of-conference tournaments all over the country. As of right now, COVID cases are three times higher than the summer spike. And this is because the non-conference games bring in, say it with me, money. But we're bringing together teams all around who have to fly commercial. And off the record, people are being smart about this. Off the when they don't have to put their name on it, they're saying things. There's a piece by Pete Thamel of Yahoo. They say a major conference official is quoted as saying, at this point, I'm not sure why we're trying. This is Jeff Goodman of Stadium. He wrote a piece. One high major coach said, I wonder if in like 10 to 14 days it will be shut down. It's irresponsible. But people only care about money. At least Rick Pitino will put his name on it. You're talking about a high major coach who's saying, using the words, it's irresponsible. This is an indoor sport. This is non-bubbled. And now you're having to, you're going to a casino in Connecticut, and they're lying to you about how it's safe. They're talking about the Mohegan Sun tournament. ESPN spoke to the casino's chief marketing officer, who explained it away by saying the casino's equipped with UV lights, temperature scanners, and a mandatory mask order. And this is a direct quote from that piece. It says, from a team perspective, they can stay on their own hotel tower floor. They can leave those hotel rooms, come to the back of the house to get to their meetings, to get to the arena. They don't have to walk through the casino if they don't want to. How strictly do the teams really want to take it? If they want their teams completely quarantined and away from everyone else, we can accommodate that. It depends on what the teams want to set up. That's not a bubble. I don't see any way that this isn't some kind of disaster, because it already is. I'm not sure what we're doing. Listen to Rick Pitino. Give the vaccine some kind of chance and call it May Madness. Wait on this. There is no good reason to be diving into this and sending people into South Dakota. I got an idea. Let's rush headlong into South Dakota right now. Stay the hell away from South Dakota. If you're in South, actually, if you're in South Dakota, probably stay there. I don't want you coming here. It's bad enough here. We don't need all the spread coming from there. And so much of this is traced back to that Sturgis motorcycle rally and numerous Trump rallies. If you read about how this all got this bad, but man, this is buckle up for college basketball to be, if and it's not just a scheduling disaster either, it's a major public health issue here. So it's something we're going to be watching. It's something we're going to be keeping our eye on right here. And this is a good point here from Rudy, who, as I went to break, sent in this email, who said, in a Jeopardy tribute, is the question, why in the hell are we playing college basketball? He said, put football there, too. I don't understand the hurry versus the risk. So the NBA will eventually find the best players, and you can cancel the entire season again. It wouldn't bother me. This is, we know why we're doing it. And when a coach is anonymously saying it's irresponsible, you know, here's to Rick Pitino. Good on you for putting your name on it and telling the truth. We have the Midday Midway coming up, and I'm just going to read to you. I thought I was going to read a news story on this. I think it's better if I just play it straight and read a press release from the U.S. Department of Justice that came out yesterday that sounds like it came out in 1974, and we're going to have some fun with this. Also, if you thought murder hornets were bad, I have something, an invasive species that might be worse. It certainly sounds more alien and more terrifying. It may not have the same name as murder hornets, but beware the hammerhead worm, because they are nasty. That's all coming up on the Midday Midway on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
The Midday Midway is brought to you by Golf Mill Ford, Illinois' largest Ford dealer. Beats every deal by at least $500. GolfMillFord.com. We started the show by talking a little bit about Jed Hoyer and the bizarre macroeconomics facing the Cubs and every other MLB team, just trying to figure out what numbers matter, how they matter, how players are valued. And then we brought in Ian Happ to talk about some of that stuff because he's an ARB-eligible player in his own right. He's trying to make the case that that 60 games is representative of how good a player he is. And Ian Happ also was secure enough to admit his Thanksgiving does not involve turkey. Interestingly enough, that the Happ family tradition evolved. They had the secondary meat of a brisket and then eventually realized that there are other better proteins than turkey. He's right. And they started doing duck.
Whoa, look out! Ducks!
Whoa! Duck and quail, actually, for one. They said they bought a bunch of quail from a farm, and I'm down with that. I like the idea of a game bird Thanksgiving. Why not? Kevin Fishbane talked Bears, and then we asked the question, college basketball, what the hell are we doing, and why are we doing it when it's probably best to shut that whole thing down? All right, I'm just going to do this as straight as I can. This is a press release from the United States Department of Justice. The headline, 15 members and associates of Philadelphia La Cosa Nostra indicted on federal racketeering charges. And just the fact that they still call it La Cosa Nostra is, you know, our thing. A superseding indictment was unsealed today against 15 defendants, including alleged members and associates of the South Philadelphia and Southern New Jersey-based criminal organization La Cosa Nostra, LCN, popularly known as the Mafia or Mob. Both of those are in quotes. The superseding indictment charges various crimes, including racketeering conspiracy, illegal gambling, loan sharking, extortion, and drug trafficking. Now, I'll remember one of the great tweets was when Freddie Kitchens was hired, when his name was circulating as the hire for the Cleveland Browns. Someone noted that Freddie Kitchens sounds like an AKA, like a nickname in a federal RICO indictment. And I laughed out loud when I saw that. And this is exactly what they're talking about here. Acting Assistant Attorney General Brian C. Rabbit of the Justice Department's Criminal Division, U.S. Attorney William M. McSwain of the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, and Special Agent in Charge Michael Driscoll of the FBI's Philadelphia Field Office made the announcement. The defendants charged in the 7-count superseding indictment are Stephen Mazzoni, a.k.a. Stevie, 56. Dominic Grande, a.k.a. Dom, a.k.a. Mr. Hopkins, a.k.a. Mr. Brown, and a.k.a. Dom 14, 41. Joseph Servidio, a.k.a. Joey Electric, 60. Salvatore Mazzone, a.k.a. Sonny, 55. Joseph Malone, 70. Louis Beretta, a.k.a. Louis Sheep, 56. Victor DeLuca, a.k.a. Big Vic, 56. Kenneth Arabia, a.k.a. Kenny, 67. Daniel Castelli, also known as Danny, Kazi, and Butch and Harry, age 67. Carl Chianese, age 81. Anthony Gifoli, a.k.a. Tony Meatballs. Skypoint, 72. John Romeo, 58. Daniel Malatesta, 75, Daniel Buccheroni, 66, and John Michael Payne, 33. That last name is the equivalent of the guy at the end of the Key and Peele East-West sketch. Dan Smith, BYU. Wow. First of all, Louis Sheep, if your name is already Louis Beretta, it's already, I mean, you'd think like Louis Guns or something, or Louis Cockatoo. Instead, he's Louis Sheep. I don't know how you get that. but Joey Electric. So either he's an actual, either Joseph Servideo is an actual electrician, or that was like the front to his business was, you know, he had some sort of shop, or he was like a, you know, or as I like to think, he would torture people in the in loan sharking by using electricity. He was Joey Electric, and he would hook you up. He'd put like alligator clips on you and run current through you to get what he wanted. That's a good reason to be Joey Electric.
It's a lovely name.
But Anthony Gifoli, Tony Meatballs. I mean, this is an actual RICO indictment, and they have Joey Electric and Tony Meatballs in it, and it's like this is from either 1974 or it's from The Onion. Either way, we have to savor it.
Dan Smith, BYU.
That's the last guy, John Payne. Like, what's he doing there? Come on, man. All right, murder hornets are bad. This might be worse, and it's certainly more disgusting. This from CNN. Sightings of an invasive species of snake-like worm are being reported in Georgia. They're called shovel-headed garden worms, also known as hammerhead worms, and they've recently been reported in the state, according to University of Georgia Agriculture Extension agent James Murphy.
They're also called Georgians.
These things are gross. Over 100 sightings in the Atlanta area have been announced on iNaturalist, a social networking service. The snake-like worm, which can grow up to nearly a foot in length, gets its name due to its half-moon-shaped head. The mouths of hammerhead worms are located midway down the bottom surface of their bodies rather than on their heads. And they can apparently, like, avulse their mouths in a way and extend them out to grab prey. The worms are carnivorous. They feed primarily on earthworms. They're also known to prey on other soil-dwelling invertebrates. But wait, there's more. These worms produce tetrodotoxin. If that sounds familiar, tetrodotoxin is the same deadly neurotoxin produced by pufferfish. That's the one where if you're cutting up the fugu in Japan, you have to be like a black belt sushi chef to be allowed to cut up the fugu, the pufferfish, without touching the, is it the liver or whatever sack holds the tetrodotoxin. So they produce that. They say there's not enough research on the function of the toxin within the worm's biology. It's speculated the toxin may help the worms catch prey or avoid being eaten themselves. They say they do not appear to be able to secrete enough of the toxin to be considered dangerous. They still say exercise caution as tetrodotoxin is very dangerous. Records indicate that the species has been in the U.S. for nearly a century. But they think this could be due to climate change or human migration. The worms are spread through the soil. It's possible that an influx of exotic plants into an area, maybe this is like the Chinese seeds, perhaps, if you remember we covered that story, that along with rising temperatures could lead to increased population. So the question is, what do you do if you see one? And you'd think, okay, go out and chop it up. No. Because this is a planaria worm. And if you've ever done experiments like in science class, planaria are usually water-dwelling worms. This is a land planarian. They can reproduce from cut body sections. So if you cut them up, any one of those chunks can immediately grow another head and become another toxin-secreting worm. So they say if you have to dispatch the worms, use hot water or place them in dry paper towels to desiccate them. That seems like a lot of work if you got to dry them out to death. But seriously, if you cut it up, all you're doing is creating more of them. Ugh. Maybe if there's some way we could get the murder hornets to attack the poison carnivorous zombie worms, or maybe they would just join forces, and then that would be trouble if all of a sudden they looked at it as an opportunity, and then we're really in trouble. Yikes. We had to move some things around today. We did a flip-flop of guests. We were going to do Sage Rosenfels at 11 and Paul Charchian at 11:20, but instead, we're moving Paul Charchian up. So he's going to join us next, and after Charch, we will talk quarterbacking with Sage Rosenfels. So get ready to make sure that your fantasy football team is all set for Thanksgiving weekend. We've got new names on the waiver wire, and we've got possibilities for you. The football wisdom of Charch is next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.